Morning. So I managed to. It's so funny. I get inside and I was like, oh, forgot my Gemara again. It got moved around yesterday because I had people in my car and here and there. So that was forgotten, although I conveniently remembered to somehow bring my knapsack. That's what happens when your daughter wakes you up during the night too many times.
Normal.
Normal. I know. Okay. So basically, what it said is I like to, again, check out the Koran when we have the opportunity. So I will be very bad at telling you precisely where we are. I know that we're on 20A. I can't tell you a number of lines or anything like that. But we are on 20A. We just started the Gemara.
We'll restart from... 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from below the Gemara, right?
Okay.
From Gemara. The word Kavan is where we were at.
Perfect. Yeah, so we're at the Kavan. The money level, we'll jump back up a little bit. Okay. But basically, let's go over what we had yesterday. Yesterday, we already started with the previous Mishnah of Evan Okora Shel Hektish, okay, which is basically what constitutes a change and then benefit when you remove some sort of building materials from Hektish. Okay, we talked about how the first case is talking about a gizbar. He's got to give it to someone else if he wants to. Well, nobody wants to violate Me'ilah, but in order to violate Me'ilah, he's got to give it to someone else. We also talked about same thing with a pruta, an actual coin. Okay, that if, again, he just took it, nothing happens, he gave it to someone else, there's Me'ilah, he gave it to the bathhouse owner. Since the bathhouse is now open for him, he got his hana. We talked about the combination of any benefit from him or a friend or eating from him or a friend. And then we talked about also, the last case that I skipped till now, even though it was earlier on in the Mishnah, was if you built a stone into your house, you didn't do Me'ilah until you lived under it one Sheva Pruta's worth. So that's where we were up to yesterday. We'll just restart from Ben Abba Zach Beisam Anochaya from the two dots. If you built it into your house again, you're not chayev until you live under it a shava pruta's worth. Ask the Gemara, lama liyadri yadur tachteha, why is it that I need to live under it? Kevan, again, dishanye or debanye, we had different girsaos yesterday, but once you've, again, built it, once you've therefore caused it to leave the rishus of Hektish, ma'al, why isn't there me'il already at that point? Amar Rav, so Rav answered that over here, kigon shehinicha al pi aruba. Okay. Mm-hmm. The case is where, again, you had an opening. We said an aruba is a skylight or a chimney. Okay, here they say it's a window, but they put it as a aruba skylight in the side. Yeah, that was our raya yesterday. Mm-hmm. But here, they have beautiful picture of skylights at the bathhouse in Pompeii. No idea how that helps. But I guess it's cool, in case you wanted to know what the Pompeii bathhouse was illustrated to look like. And again, so he says, Kigon chinich al pi aruba. For example, if you placed it on top of this to block off either things from entering or whatever the case may be, and again, as they note, people would use this as an exhaust vent or things like that. But if you covered it up, and that therefore you derive benefit from it, you didn't actually technically build it into your house, so you weren't violating Me'ilah at that point, because you just placed something on top. But as soon as you derive benefit from it, that's deriving benefit from that actual stone.
That's because it's temporary. It's not a permanent thing. It's a temporary thing.
I'm not sure if it's because of the temporariness or because it wasn't built.
Sorry, it was temporary. I shouldn't have said
that. Right. I don't think it's... correct. So it definitely was temporary. The fact that you put it there, people would move it because they would sometimes use those for access as well.
Right.
However,
it's not
Me'ilah at that point. It's only Me'ilah once you get the benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Says the Gemara, V'keim on the Banila, Mihasmal. However, okay, if you did, in fact, build it into your house, okay, then you would violate Me'ilah. Okay? But again, if you did actually build it, okay. Anyways, you do have Me'ilah. There's different, slightly different ways to read. Says the Gemara, Lema say Rav. Let us say that this. It's funny. Usually, we don't have this very, very interesting
proof.
Okay. So, generally speaking, the Gemara, if it comes up with a explanation of a source that will support another controversial opinion elsewhere, the Gemara will often say Lema. Let us say Misayeya. That this assists lay to him to a certain person. Okay, so meaning if we have a new interpretation that would imply a certain logical stance or halachic stance, we will then say, let us say that this supports another opinion elsewhere. Why I said that this one is particularly interesting is because we're saying, Lema Misayel Leila Rav, let us say that this supports Rav's opinion, to Amar Rav HaMishtach HaVelabayis Asaro, that Rav was of the opinion that, okay, normally bowing down to something and making it a god is, first of all, Avodah Zarah. Number two, it makes that object prohibited. However, normally something attached to the ground, other than obviously an Asherah, which is a tree, which were made into Avodah Zarahs in the times of Tanakh, routinely, but other than the tree, something attached to the ground, okay? If one would bow down to that and worship that, it would not become a prohibited object. Okay, there are certain differences between in all across halacha between things that are mechubar lakarka and things that are not mechubar lakarka. However, Rav was of the opinion that if you bow down to a house,
it's attached to the ground.
Okay, that is right now attached to the ground. Nevertheless, the house becomes prohibited due to avodah zarah. The reason why I said this is particularly interesting is because whose opinion are we using to support whose opinion?
I can't remember.
The previous line, who said, Kigon Chini Chalpi Aruba?
Rav.
Right? Now, the truth is,
it's not really
from that, because really it's because Bekevan the Bani Lami Hasmal. We're saying that had you technically built it into the structure, the Mishnah would say that you have committed Mi'ilah. Therefore, it's a proof from the Mishnah to the opinion of Rav. I just thought it was funny that for a second it sounds like it's Rav, but it's not. Actually, okay, the proof is v'kevan debani la, that since if you legitimately built it into the house, there is me'ila. Okay, so therefore, what does that mean?
Rabbi?
Yes?
If you pay $2.5 million for a bungalow in this neighborhood, doesn't that imply it has godly powers?
There we go. Probably. I mean, if I pay 2.5 for a bungalow in this neighborhood, then there's definitely some godly intervention. But for the rest of you, the point is that from the fact that we see that building something into a house and then subsequently violating Mi'ilah, okay, even though, again, it's attached to the ground, perhaps that supports the opinion that the house is considered not attached from the ground. Not attached to the ground. Why? Because, again, this piece that you're putting on, okay, again, we're putting it as part of the house, but we're saying you derived benefit from that individual piece. That's the bottom line. I mean, we're able to view the house as not attached to the ground in regards to benefit. So too, in regards to benefit of Avodah Zarah, maybe we're able to view this house as not attached to the ground, and able to be benefited, meaning in this case, not able to be benefited from because
for
prohibited.
Sure, if you put a stone in them permanently, it's the same thing, same idea.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Answers the Gemara. Amar Rav Acha. Rav Acha says, Braid Rav Ika, the son of Rav Ika says, Hana'a hanir es le'inayim asra Torah. He says, no, there's no raya from our Mishnah, from the Psak, that there is Me'ila if you built it into a house to Rav. Because it's very simple. When it comes to Me'ila, the Torah prohibits what we call Hana'a Hanir'et La'inayim, which literally means, okay, any visible benefit. And since here, okay, there is visible benefit when you live in a house, you can see, you took the stone is now keeping your walls up, it's keeping your roof up, you're living under it. So that's enough. Even though it's true that we will view it as attached to the ground, okay, even though it's true that we'll view it as attached to the ground, nevertheless, we're willing to concede that specifically by Me'ila, this passes the threshold for Hana, for benefit, but that wouldn't necessarily be the case when it comes to Avodah Zarah. In Avodah Zarah, we could say it's attached to the ground. No worries. Why? Because there, it might not be dependent on what's near Le'inayim, what's visible, but rather what's the reality. The reality is the house is attached to the ground. Halachically speaking, that's the status of the house, but over here, we only care about what people see.
Is the visibility to the public or to the Baal? To everybody, I guess. Visible to anybody.
Yeah, I think it's saying that
one looks at the place and they know.
Yeah, I mean, what it may be saying is just sort of a broader a broader interpretation of what Hana is for Mi'ilah. I think that's really what we're trying to say, is that Mi'ilah's Hana is a very broad Mi'ilah, is a very broad Hana. Don't assume that that's analogous to the Hana of a house.
So this opinion, just a vote azar, is irrelevant to this opinion.
Correct. And this is rejecting the support from our Mishnah to Rav's statement about a vote azar. That's precisely. Okay. Lema misayale. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. You're right. You got us. There's no conclusive proof from this part of the Mishnah. Let's try another Mishnah. Okay? Or sorry, a Braisa. Lema misayale. Let's say another thing supports him. Lema, let's say, misayale supports lei to him. I'll note if we're working on Aramaic grammar also. Okay, we talked about Dalet and Zion being interchangeable. Now, was that here?
Yes.
Yeah. So, right, Dahava is Zahav.
It's cool.
Okay. Yud and He, the suffix Yud and He in Aramaic, is the same suffix as a Vav in Hebrew. So, right, Lema Mesayeya Le is Lema Mesayeya Lo. Right?
Oh, that way, yes.
Right? So, Yud He suffix.
Dual vowel.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yud He suffix is always Lo. So, all the time, okay, you have a Yud He at the end of an Aramaic word. If you want to know what it is in Hebrew, you can replace that Yud He with a Vav.
After you're talking about suffixes, the suffix in Aramaic, if you put an aleph at the end of the word, it's the definite article.
Uh-huh. Right. Besa, right. This house.
The house.
The house, yeah, yeah. Right. Yes, so aleph at the end, there's a few other ones.
Yeah.
Nuns, but I just saw this one here coming up again and again. Always good to put these things in, because as we said, it's good to make it as relevant as possible, even if the content may not be super relevant. Mm-hmm. Other than for your 2.5 million houses, $2.5 million houses, then at least we can make the grammar relevant. So, let us say an additional support to him. Hadar b'vayit shel hektish. If one lives in a house of hektish, kevan shenehenem imena ma'al. Okay, as soon as you've lived in it, you have done me'ila. Okay, so it seems to be, where? You had a house. Okay, you were really, really rich, so you took your $2.5 million house, and you were makdish it. Okay, so now we've got a beautiful house, and says the, what's the braisa, what's the halacha? If someone goes and lives in that house, which is Hektish's house, we see there's Hana, and therefore there's Me'ila. And again, once again, we're assuming that therefore the house is considered detached. Okay, because again, if it wasn't detached, then it would be hard to understand why there's Mi'ila in this case. Now, it's very interesting why the Gemara doesn't just try the same answer again, because I think it would be relevant.
You said detached. I think it's attached, isn't it? I mean, this is what he says here. Harilena yesh Mi'ila b'bayit afal pisha achshav hu mechubar l'karka.
Correct. Yeah. Meaning, so, l'halacha, it's considered detached.
Oh, I see.
Meaning, we're just looking at it from two different perspectives. The house is obviously physically attached to the ground. There's no question. The question is, how do we view it halachically speaking? This seems to imply that we view it halachically speaking as being detached, and therefore I'm liable for Me'ila. So perhaps that would imply that so too, by Avodah Zarah, the house is considered detached, and therefore if one bows down to it, the house becomes prohibited to benefit from.
Right.
Good?
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So, says the Gemara, Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, no, you misunderstood that braisa. Hasam, over there, that braisa, b'sheik disho ul basof b'na'o. It's where first you were makdish all of the different parts of the house, and then ul basof, and at the end b'na'o, then you built them. So at the time when they were makdished, they were separate. So therefore, violating me'ila, is easy because they were originally detached from the ground. It's not clear from here, I wish I had a normal Gemara, when exactly they were built. What does ulabasof b'na'o mean? Does that mean when the person themselves built them as part of the Me'ila, or does that mean, presumably, even when they were built prior to the person being Moel? Who? One more time?
Shehikdish et avanim.
Yeah.
Ba'itzim ba'odam telushim.
Yeah.
Bachar kach bana bahem.
Who built the bayit?
Bachar kach bana.
Hektish built the bayit?
No. The person who was building the house made a hektish.
How can he do that? What do you mean? What do you mean? He took materials.
He made the various items required to build a house.
Yeah.
Kodesh.
He made them Kodesh, and then what?
Then he built the house. Then he built the house.
What do you mean? They're Hektish's stuff.
Yeah, that's what it says here. He's saying, I'll read it again. Shekdisho, let's open
up. We're saying Hektish gave him permission to build the house? Like, what's the story? I understand. Yeah. I know what the case is, but I'm just trying to understand, how does he build it without violating Me'ilah himself?
In the first place, you said, really?
Oh, we're talking about that person. So that was effectively my question before. So it's the same person.
Yeah.
So he was Makdish, his own stuff. He built the house for Hektish.
That's right.
And then he lived in it.
Then he lived in it.
Okay, sorry. I thought we were talking about a second person who came in and lived in the house. And that's why I was trying to understand whether the second person was the one who built it or whether it was the first person.
Because
I don't know what the halacha would be in that case, but you're saying this is the same guy.
Yeah, he says when they made him Hektish, they were...
Got it.
And after that, then there's Milas right then.
Got
and
it. So right. Okay, so we still don't have an answer to my question, but we know that this case is talking about where the same person, so that's our conclusion is. A person came, was Makdish a bunch of stones, came, built a house with those stones, and then lived in that house.
Yeah. And he said, goes on to say, the commentator here, that if he makes it Hektish after he's built it, then there's no Me'ilah.
Correct, because then it's considered attached to the ground.
Yeah.
Because then it's considered attached to the ground. That I can,
right.
Yeah. Right, my question was, mm-hmm. where exactly is the line for this? Let's say a person was Makdish. This, again, the materials, then built a house, and then his friend came and lived in it, but not, meaning, not because he told his friend, come live in this house.
Yeah.
A random guy off the street walks into the house, sets up shop.
So
is that like the case where it's attached or detached? That's what I'm not sure about.
It depends on the dot of the person that goes in, too. If he knows it's Hektish and it's Mila, he doesn't know. There's nothing there.
Uh-huh. So it's not Me'ila from a Chubar Lakarka, even
that's
though
right.
it was already built,
yeah.
because it was Makdished when it was... Okay, that's an interesting take. Avabanao basofik tisha mayas the Gemara, but let's say you built it and then you were Makdish it, meaning, let's say that was the actual case. Mm-hmm. Okay, says the Gemara, my lo mal, are you going to tell me? Okay, my lo mal. Okay, if it's in fact true that you did not do Me'ila. And again, he has a different way of reading it, but I think that's the correct. It's a rhetorical question. Mai, are you telling me, lo mal, what? Are you telling me that he would not violate Me'ila? So if that was true, that if you built a house and then was Makdishit, and then someone came and lived in it, that there's no Me'ila, asks the Gemara, my iria, okay, for what purpose really? Why specifically? Rahit is the Tana running, right? Rahit is here being very quick. Vitani and teaches Hadar Bivayas Shel Ma'ara Lomal, because we've got another case, okay? That it says, one who lives in a house of a cave, okay? In a cave house. Meaning such a house obviously was, okay, never detached. A cave is part of the ground. And says the case over there, Loma'al, that you're not Moel in that case, Lema, instead he should have just said the case that Reish Lakish said. Right? Hadar b'vayis shalavanim shebenoul basofik dishalomal. Why does the Brisa have to go and give us a second case to say, in the first case, you do Me'ilah, but in the second case, this new case of vayis shalma'ara, then you're namal. It should have said a much simpler case. If you built it and then were mocked, it meaning a regular house. That's the case of no Me'ilah. Why do we have to run to the cave case? Asks the Gemara. Okay. Answers the Gemara. That's not a question. Amri, we can say, ha, this case, psikale, it's guaranteed, it's conclusive, it's straightforward. The case of a cave house, there's always not going to be Me'ilah because it's definitively attached to the ground. However, ha, this other case of v'no basofik disho, lo psikale. A house is not a universal law, right? A house is not a universal law. A house depends on when it was built, what materials it was built from, all of these other things. So therefore, to specifically use the case of Vinol Basofik Tisho is a less clear case. The Tana would rather use a more clear case of a Ma'ara, of a cave, where that's always considered attached to the ground, and therefore where there's never Me'ilah, as opposed to using a particular scenario in which a house happens to be exempt from Me'ilah because it was first built and then Makdished. But in a Hanami, it's true that in that case, there's no Me'ilah.
How can one designate a cave house for Hektish?
On your property.
But practically speaking, how are you going to get it there?
You don't get it there. They own the land. How can one sanctify land?
Sell the cave and then take the money and
do that too. You can do that too.
Well, that would be not the actual land. You say, I am Makdish this piece of land to Hektish, right? And there are all sorts of rules. A lot of it is Arachin related, not actually about the people, but there it talks a lot about the land and all of the rules of land that are in Parshas Bahar and otherwise. There is a specific, explicit talk of the Torah. If someone is makdish a field, what's the halacha? How does it get redeemed? But you can actually be makdish a physical area of land, right? I mean, we're talking about the houses in this neighborhood. Really, we're not talking about houses. We're talking about land. So you are actually able to be makdish land. And if the land contains something of value, okay, if the land contains this type of fruit field, okay, or grain, right? Again, these have different values. If you makdish a land full of rocks, it's a different value. But this would be talking about where you're makdish a land with a cave, right? Like we have coming up, Parshat Chayisara, right? Hasadeh veha'me'ara asher bo, right? When Avram buys the cave in the land, so he needs to go buy the land, and then he gets the cave along with it. Okay, well, this is a very fancy thing. Summary and introduction. Okay, let's continue with the next parak. Yes, Hadron Allah Hanane. Okay. The first Mishnah, very fun Mishnah, goes back to something that we saw a couple of days ago when we were talking about the comparisons between Truma and Me'ilah. Okay, and we talked about Shliach She'asa Shlichuta. We talked about, in general, there is a law that in Shliach L'dvar Avera. Okay, in Shliach L'dvar Avera, that if your boss tells you to do something that Hashem tells you not to do, you're expected to listen to Hashem, not to your boss. Okay? And that therefore you cannot blame your boss and say, well, he told me, if you did the Avera, it's your fault. When it comes to Me'ilah, there are some differences because, again, it's all about benefit. It's all about benefit. Who's getting the benefit?
The Baalis, in that case.
And we're going to talk about it right now. Okay. Yeah. Says the Mishnah, HaShaliach She'asa Shlichuto. Okay, if you had a agent, if you had a Shaliach, so a Shaliach, let's just clear up some terms. Shaliach is a term that's used a lot across the Gemara. Shaliach literally means one who was sent. Okay, so again, people will translate it agent. Okay, shlichut is the act of sending a shaliach, and the mishaliach is the one who sent the shaliach. Okay, so mishaliach is the sender, shaliach is the one who is sent. Okay, again, which we often translate agent, and shlichut is the general category of sending someone else. And there's a lot of discussion all around Shas as to what is the status of different shaliachs. Okay, what if you had shaliach to do this? In Gittin, shlichus is very important. But we talk about such important agencies as ein shlichus lekatan, and what about a goy? And all of these questions are very, very relevant because we do shlichus a lot.
It's like a mission.
Correct. It's precisely a mission. Okay, we do shlichus a lot, according to some, in many different cases. Here's an example. Shlichus for mitzvos, sending someone else to do a mitzvah on our behalf or appointing someone else to do a mitzvah on our behalf. What's an example that some people say is shlichus? Bris milah, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming that we are not each the moels for sons that we may have. If one goes to a moel and says, can you perform the bris milah? Really, the bris milah is a mitzvah that should be performed by the father. We're making a shaliach, okay? In Gittin, I think they even still use shluchim for certain parts of it.
The argument, who's the shliach for?
Correct. So not an argument. There's two different possible shliachs. There's a shliach that can send it, a shliach that can accept it. But there's lots and lots and lots of cases of shlichus. Okay. So here in this case, we're going to talk about how here is different than all those other cases. Hashaliach she'asa shlichuto, the shaliach who carried out properly their shlichut, baal habayit ma'al. The baal habayit is the one who violates me'ilah. Okay. Again, this is different than all other cases, really. Lo asa shlichuto, but if he didn't fulfill the words of the baal habayit properly, then hashliach ma'al. What's going on here? So basically, okay, the owner sends him and says, I want you to go to Hektish and use their dreidel for Hanukkah. Okay, so the guy goes and he uses the dreidel and he wins his mishaleach $50 or whatever the case is, or he uses the, and I'm not sure dreidel is a great idea, but anyways, he uses the dreidel on behalf of the baal habayit, and he derives benefit from him. from it, since again we have this idea that the person getting the benefit doesn't necessarily need to be you. So in that case, if he followed what the Balabayit said, the Balabayit violates Mi'ilah. However, if he didn't do, okay, he messed up in his thing and he instead decided to use a tomato of Hektish, okay, in such a case, the Shliach violates Mi'ilah. Okay? Ketzad. And now the Mishnah is going to give us more specific cases. Amar lo. If he said to him, Tein basar la'orchim, he told his Shliach, I want you to give meat to our guests. V'natan lahem kaved, but instead of giving them meat, he gave them liver. Or kaved, he said, give them liver. V'natan lahem basar, and he gave them regular meat. In both of those cases, hashliach ma'al, because the shliach violated mi'ilah. Why? Because the master said to do something else. The master said to take meat, which was mi'ilah, and he gave them liver of mi'ilah. Who decided to give them the liver? The shliach. Therefore, the shliach was the one who took it and changed it and violated, and the benefit was had by the guests. But if he listened to what his master said, the master would have violated mi'ilah for misusing meat of hektish. Okay, let's continue. Amar lo, tein lahem chaticha chaticha. This is a very fascinating case. If he said to him, give them each one piece. Okay, meaning a piece for him and a piece for him. V'hu amar, and the shaliach said to each of the guests, tlu shtayim, I want you to take two pieces each. V'heim natlu shalosh, and they took three pieces each. So again, he said, we're moving up very quickly here. The original, the balabayit, the mishaliach said, tell them one piece each of meat. Shaliach's like, no problem. Guys, two pieces each of meat. And they're like, ah, oh, he's letting us take two, let's take three. Okay, in this case, says the Mishnah, kulam ma'alu. Everyone does mi'ilah. Why? Because each person added on an additional piece of meat from Hektish. The Balabayis was wrong in taking the first piece of meat from Hektish. The Shaliach changed in that he added on to what the Balabayis said. I mean, he fulfilled what the Balabayis said, but he added on a second piece of meat. And the people who actually took it were Mishana. They fulfilled what the Shaliach told them. So he is now violated Mi'ilah. And then they took a third piece of meat and ate it. Okay, so in this case, all three parties have violated Mi'ilah.
The Baal also.
Baal? Oh, you're saying the two people. Yeah, yeah. I meant each category of person, but yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, good. So there's a few assumptions here.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same
assumptions
thing.
Assumptions are that the meat is Mi'ilah to begin with.
Yes.
Okay.
Assume that everybody
You absolutely
knows
that, have to.
But you have to assume that everybody knew it was Hektish too.
Yeah.
Right? Because if he doesn't know, how can he begin
How in the first place can you feed Hektish meat to guests?
You're talking about a Russia. I know we usually try to avoid talking about people that are doing averos, but we have to illustrate.
Case,
yeah.
Then the Baal is also guilty. Mm-hmm. The Shaliach gets it wrong,
mm-hmm.
but the Baal gave him
No, he's off
bad
the
instructions
hook.
To begin with.
No, he's off
even
the hook.
Even if he served it, yeah. So it's just not that.
Which case? The case of the two, one, two,
the
three.
Liver. No,
she
the
knew
liver.
The liver.
So she knew
the liver. How is the Baal on the case?
Because the Baal's committed. Baal has told the Shaliach to commit Me'ilah. Even if the Shaliach got it,
Shaliach did. One second. If I tell you,
yeah,
do an avera. I'm sending you to be my assassin.
Yeah.
And you don't assassinate anyone. How did you do anything wrong? How did I do anything wrong?
Well, you may be guilty of counseling. You may be guilty of counseling.
Okay, I didn't tell you to assassinate that person. Yeah. Right? I didn't tell you to do that. You're not following my orders, so to say. And that's what the Baal is saying here. I told you to give them meat. So what if there was some meat that was Hektish?
So the Baal gets off on it.
Correct.
Yeah.
He gets
correct. If the shaliach changed.
Yes.
If the shaliach did not fulfill to the letter.
Even though he told the shaliach to commit an avera.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the shaliach did not commit that avera, right? The shaliach committed a separate avera that was not what the Baal told him. And the Baal, he can come back to the Baal and say, well, why do you do this? And he said, what are you talking about? I didn't tell you to do that.
So then, why in the last case are mm-hmm. all three of them?
Because each of their words were fulfilled. If I said, or if you okay. said, give them one, I did give them one.
Okay.
They also got a second and a third.
Okay.
But the actual intention, correct.
Okay.
Correct. Good?
Right.
Yeah. Sorry.
Other questions?
No, that was my question too. I mean, everything depends upon what these people knew in their mind. I mean, the Gemara doesn't say that. They all have to know it's Hektish.
Okay. Okay, I mean, in order to violate it, in order to violate, in order to,
it's for shogeg, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, but shogeg you can also.
So, okay. you can be found responsible moral even as a shogeg.
Good question. I don't remember offhand, but
yeah. I mean, I just leave it in the open because people have to know what's going on in order to be guilty.
I think you do.
All right. Well, maybe it'll show up. All right.
Okay. Okay. Asks the Gemara, Man Tana, and again we've talked about this in the past few days, Man Tana, which Tana, the Kol Milsa de Mimlach ala Shliach, says that the Kol Milsa, any Milsa literally means a word, like Mila, okay, but Milsa often, Gemara means anything, okay, the Kol Milsa, it's like Davar, right, Davar comes from the same root as Ledaber, but also means thing, okay, the Kol Milsa, that every thing, de Mimlach ala Shliach, Mimlach means asks or requests clarification. Okay? Man Tana, which Tana says, Dechol Milsa de Mimlach ala Shaliach, that anything that the Shaliach requests clarification upon, Tarti Mili Havyan, would be considered two different things. Meaning, the Gemara is challenging a different assumption of the Mishnah. Okay? The Gemara is challenging a different assumption of the Mishnah, which is, how do we know that meat is different than liver? Liver is a type of meat. Maybe he did fulfill his shlichus in that case. So says the Gemara, obviously the Mishnah holds he didn't fulfill his shlichus. So which opinion is this? Amar of Chista. Okay, and Tarti Mili Havyan, that these are considered two different things. Okay, again, Tarti, two, Mili, things, Havyan, they are. Amar of Chista, Rav Chista says, Deloka Rabbi Akiva. It's the opinion of the Tanakama who opposes Rabbi Akiva. It's not, because we learned the following in a Mishnah, Nedarim, Hanoder Min Hayerek. Let's say someone says, I am making a neder not to eat vegetables. Mutar b'diluin. It's permitted to eat diluin, which we translate normally as dala'at is a gourd. But some sort of squash or something like that.
Melon. Okay?
Melon. Yeah, some people have melon.
Isn't really a vegetable.
Right. So the point is that however, for Rabbi Akiva, Oster. Rabbi Akiva says, no, you're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, okay, as it's added here, that is all about whether or not if you were sent to the market as a shaliach. Okay, so again, if someone sends you and says, hey, can you pick up some veggies for me? And you went to the supermarket, the only veggie was gourd, would you go and ask them, would you go and check with them, do you want gourd or not? Okay, again, if you saw peppers there, you would not go back and ask. If you saw lettuce there, you would not go back and ask. But a gourd, you would go back and ask. Nevertheless, okay, he says if they were not in the same, Rabbi Akiva's of the opinion, if they were not in the same category, you wouldn't ask. Meaning it has to, by virtue of the fact that an agent would ask the person who sent them, should I buy this? That means they're closely enough related. So too, in our mission, again, if you were sent to buy meat and you said all there is here is liver, Sir Rabbi Akiva would say, that is evidence that they're closely related. So therefore, our Mishnah does not follow his opinion because he would, in fact, hold that they are too closely related and that you did, in fact, fulfill the words of the Baal HaBayit by giving them liver, whereas the Tanakama says, no, anytime you have to ask about it, it means it was not included in the original request for Shlichut.
So I have a question. The word Mamlich also means to seek counsel, to seek advice.
Yes, that's what I said, to ask about it.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Just ask us.
Yes. To see, Mimlach, we see it Mimlach b'Sanhedrin or b'Bezdin. Right. Yeah. We do see that all the case. Yeah. There's other translations as well, but I think those are among the better two. So we'll stop over here. That our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says the fact that you would clarify whether or not someone still wants this object is evidence that it is part of the original category. Tanakama says the fact that you would clarify shows that it's not part of the original category. Therefore, the Tanakama must be the one in our Mishnah who says that Kaved and Basar are different things. Just very briefly, I wanted to ask about, and we can turn off the recording.